Hi, everybody. I'm so delighted that you could be here with us today because I get to talk to one of my dear friends and one of the most brilliant men I know, Dr. Peter Lambrow. He and his associate, George Pratt, have just written a very exciting book called Code to Joy. George and Peter are both licensed psychologists in practice at Scripps Memorial Hospital in La Jolla, California. And they both have served as chairman of the Department of Psychology and are on staff at Scripps. They have private practices that specialize in mind-body techniques, psychotherapy, hypnotherapy, and performance enhancement, which they have helped a Super Bowl champ, Olympic medalist, professional athletes, top executives, and all kinds of amazing people rise to their highest levels of performance. And I'm very excited to be able to be talking to my friend Peter today about his new book, Code to Joy. Hi, Peter.
Oh, hi, Paula. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
My pleasure. This is really cool because I get a chance to sort of ask you the inside scoop information before the world even sees this book.
I know, yes.
Because we're launching April 3rd, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
And the hope
is going to release it on April 3rd, and it'll be available through all the conventional outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those kinds of places.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. And, of course, the hope is everybody buys it on that day, and then you guys zoom to the top of the charts, right?
Absolutely, and then I can actually send my child to college.
Yay!
Yeah!
And we like his child, so let's do what we can. She is a fabulous person and an amazing surfer, by the way. But we want her to have an education as
yes,
well.
Yes, right. Actually, we want people to really experience the book and get the benefits of it, and that's really the fundamental reason we wrote the book, was to be able to give people a tool to change their lives in a positive direction.
Well, you know I love that, because you and I are aligned in that. I, too, and those people listening who know my work know that I'm all about empowering the client. I think, boy, when we can give them tools to go, so to speak, that they can walk out the door with and be able to utilize in their own lives to help themselves between sessions is a great thing.
It sure is.
Because a lot of life goes on between sessions, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Right.
So your goal in writing this book was also to empower the reader to be able to help themselves.
Exactly. You know, my colleague George and I, over the years, have explored lots of different approaches to helping people. We specialized in hypnosis, and we've utilized innovative approaches such as eye movement desensitization reprocessing, or EMDR, as many people refer to it. And more recently, in the space of 25, 30 years, means mm-hmm. the last 12 or 15, we've really come to realize the power of energy psychology, and so that's another innovative approach, and one that you're very familiar with, that we've blended into these processes that are in Code to Joy.
Fabulous. And what I'm kind of excited about in this book, too, and I've noticed in some of the interviews that George has done with Larry King and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
there was a time when people considered those of us using energy psychology modalities as the woo-woo club. But it's not that way anymore, is it? So tell me a little bit about that.
You know, more and more over the last decade, research has been done in the field of energy psychology, energy medicine, and the recognition that while many years we separated mind and body, medicine looked at the body, psychology looked at the mind, that the integration of those two as a single unit, the mind and body working together, is a phenomenal resource when we don't separate them, when we're able to blend them together and start to work mm-hmm. with the mind and body as a single unit. And that's, I think, one of the contributions that energy psychology has provided, is the recognition that the mind and body can interact with each other in a positive way. So the techniques that we've developed and others that are working in the field, including yourself, are working at that integration.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the concept of integrative medicine has really caught on in the last two decades, the last decade for sure, over 150 hospitals around the country, and we're talking about major hospitals here locally, Scripps Integrative Medicine, Duke, and many other major medical institutions have integrated medicine centers where they are looking at how healing touch, how the various ways of approaching the mind-body are really powerful ways to help healing, and you know, used in surgery centers so that people can recover from a variety of different procedures more quickly, heal more quickly. Yeah, it's a very powerful process.
And it's an exciting time. I know, you know, currently I have offices in two practices here in the San Diego area, one with a general practitioner, doctor who is an anti-aging specialist, and she's very open to what we're doing here in mind-body work. And the other office is with a veterinarian, which may sound kind of funny, but her practice is for well-being and health for people and their pets. And she also practices homeopathy, so she's totally in alignment with the whole idea of energy medicine. So times are changing, and people have some cool options now as to what they can do to help themselves get better, healing both body, mind, and spirit. So I think it's a very exciting time and a perfect time for this kind of book.
These methods are really available for anyone who simply take the time to read a book or listen to an audio or do some process, take a workshop or whatever, and learn how to do these things for themselves. And there again, we're back to that concept of self-empowerment, about people being able to do this for themselves rather than becoming dependent on a medication or dependent on going to see somebody on a regular and ongoing basis.
And one of the things I love so much about these techniques is the simplicity. I mean, it really is feasible that people can learn these in a small amount of time, in a couple of sessions or in a half-day workshop, and implement them themselves to truly make a difference in their own lives.
Yes.
I've done, you know, one of the things I'm very excited about right now is doing some work with veterans, and I hope to expand that, because in our area here in San Diego, I recently learned, we are the largest veteran center in the country.
Yes.
Over 780,000 veterans are here. And these techniques, recently I worked with a guy just teaching him a couple of simple techniques, balanced breathing from your first book, Instant Emotional Healing, and then working with him, teaching him a meridian tapping method, totally transformed the anger and the out-of-control issues he was having as a result of his time in Afghanistan. And like 8 months later now, he and his wife just adopted a 3-year-old child. And what I hear from everybody is he's like the dream dad. That's just unheard
wonderful
of.
Wonderful story.
You know,
yes,
it is.
Know
because
that,
we
yes.
know there are stories of veterans who have been on every kind of medication, who have been alcoholics and drug addicts and done all that trying to soothe the pain and can't find the relief, can't find a means to make the shift.
And to be able to do it for themselves, to be able to do something at home, on their own, gives them the feeling of can do under other circumstances beyond the moment, so that when other things happen, they have a tool to work with and be able to resolve emotional distresses. What we've done with Coded Joy has gone beyond where we were with the instant emotional healing, the acupressure for the emotions, which we wrote some years ago. And after that book, we received a lot of emails and correspondence and other calls and so forth from thousands of people who had read that book, benefited from it, and asked us, what about the next level? It wasn't designed to really address something much deeper. And that's where people were asking, what about this prevailing feeling that I have? Even though that anger is gone, I still don't feel happy. I still don't seem to be able to find joy in life and the kind of uplifting feeling that I was hoping for. And that's what led us to go to the next step in writing this book, was to dig a little bit deeper for people. And that led to understanding the influence of core beliefs, of what we call life-limiting beliefs that people develop. And for the most part, Paula, these beliefs emanate from life experiences in early life, childhood primarily, or early adulthood. We all can understand that if a person has an enormous trauma, if they've been in a life-threatening car accident, if they've suffered from a potentially, you know, life-altering illness and then recovered, those are the kinds of, you might say, physical traumas, or if they've suffered, you might say, some sort of violent crime.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of traumas that we all can recognize and go, well, of course a person has developed an effect from that. But what the vast majority of people experience and don't recognize are what we call micro-traumas. These are experiences that occur in childhood that are below that threshold of something that everyone would look at and go, oh, gee, well, of course he or she is traumatized.
Right.
These are the little cuts, the little injuries that occur, a criticism and harshness from a caregiver, not just once or twice, but perhaps repeatedly. Being ignored or neglected in a family and being kind of shoved aside and felt to not matter.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing traumatic on the big scale, but on the small scale,
mm-hmm.
a young person starts to develop a belief about themselves.
Right.
And most people have had some kind of experience or experiences like that. And while many of us work through those in some fashion, we might say organically,
mm-hmm.
Many people get stuck in those beliefs that never get changed or updated. And then when they become adults, when they get a little further into the complexities of life, pay taxes, for example, and so forth, then they start to experience triggers to those belief systems. And that's what prevents them from actually being able to experience happiness,
mm-hmm.
being able to get to connect with the joy of their life.
Because it's sort of cumulative over time.
Yes.
This is one place where I love kind of the overlap between your work and mine. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm a grief specialist, and so I kind of look at everything through that window or that filter of grief. And this fog of distress, as you so perfectly describe it in the book, I kind of look at as what happens in this accumulation of loss experiences. All those little micro-traumas you talk about, to me, are loss experiences that don't get resolved because it's not obvious grief. It's like, we all know when somebody dies, the family's grieving, right?
Right.
We know if some big thing happens, there might be grief, but most people out there don't even associate grief with anything other than death. So that caregiver assaulting you or that caregiver not speaking kindly to you can create losses of trust or losses of identity or self-esteem or those kinds of things that lead to those beliefs that you're describing. So I see this as such perfect overlap in the work we're doing. That fog of distress, to me, is an accumulation of unreconciled grief.
It's a very good way to characterize it. You know, when we talk about the fog of distress, one of the metaphors we discuss in there is that most people don't recognize if you walked out of your house and you couldn't see more than about 2 or 3 feet, and that fog, that obscuring fog, actually extended for an entire block all around you and several feet above your head, you might imagine how much water would be in that. And most people might estimate quite a bit of water would be in that fog of reality, we'll
mm-hmm,
call it, the real
mm-hmm.
fog. Actually, it's less than a glass of water.
Really?
That dispersed through the air obscures the ability to see more than a few feet ahead.
Wow.
Now, these micro-traumas we're talking about are these tiny little injuries, these tiny little griefs, are dispersed through our lives in much the same way and obscure our ability to experience the joy, the happiness,
mm-hmm.
the pleasures of life. However small these droplets of water are, these little micro-traumas may seem very small, but when accumulated
mm-hmm.
over time, they do have that power to obscure. So that's the metaphor of the fog of distress that
great.
People experience.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting, it kind of, when people are in that fog, they're sort of numbed, aren't they? Like, I can remember my own mother even describing to me once that she felt like she was looking through a window and watching everybody else feeling their lives fully, but she couldn't get that feeling. It's that, like that insulation, I guess, that comes when you're in a fog, or almost like being wrapped in insulation, not being able to fully connect with life, with the outside world, with your experiential part of life.
I think that's a very good way to look at how people get disconnected from their lives.
Mm.
You know, the metaphor you're describing or the experience that you're describing is one of those disconnections that people feel. And, well, there's many different ways to experience that fog of distress or that haze. That certainly is one of them.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do with Code to Joy, what we have done, is to put in place a step-by-step process that people can go through to break through that and get to the other side, to disperse the fog, in a matter of speaking, to bring the sunshine up to burn off the fog.
Right, lift the mist.
Lift the mist, right.
So what are those steps?
Well, the first thing, and we've been talking about some of those, is to identify what it is that's actually occurring in terms of what is the belief that's going on underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Neuroscience has recognized that the conscious mind has a very limited capacity to process information. What it does is very creative and very unique, so I'm not diminishing its value. But the subconscious mind operates in such a vastly more powerful way. About a million to one is what the ratio is of processing information. So a lot of our lives are really operating at the subconscious level. And that's one of the things that brought us to hypnosis originally, was working with the subconscious,
right,
which is also an effective tool. Yet there are other ways that work more quickly and can affect in a deeper way.
Mm-hmm.
So the first step is to identify what is the belief that a person has that is, let's say, unproductive, is interfering. And so we've actually created a personal belief instrument, assessment instrument in the book, so people can go through that. It's sort of a pencil-paper process, and identify some of the micro-traumas. We list many of the kinds of micro-traumas that people can experience to connect them with that, and then what is the corresponding unproductive or life-limiting belief that's associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did is we narrowed it down to essentially seven life beliefs, negative life beliefs or limiting life beliefs, that really are, in a sense, the umbrella for so many other variations. They're just variations on the theme of, say, I'm not safe would be one.
Mm-hmm.
But underneath I'm not safe is also I'm vulnerable, I'm weak, I'm exposed, all sorts of different variations. Or another one is, I'm not powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so here again, a person might feel that, well, that's one concept underneath that is feeling of weakness, feeling of inability to have the strength to have your own voice, and so forth. So once a person identifies, that's step one. The next step is what we call clear. Clearing is the ability to clear your personal bioenergy field. And all of us have a bioenergy field that exists within us and around us.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know about electroencephalography, the ability to read brain waves.
Right.
It's electrical energy.
Right.
Electrocardiograms, what are they reading? They're measuring the electrical activity of the heart. And electromyography, the muscle, the electricity that's given off by the muscles. So the body is really a very energetically charged system, and we're just talking about one dimension of that with electromagnetic and chemical electrical. So when we clear that energy field, what we're talking about is bringing an organization to it and polarity. We know that every energy field has polarity.
Mm-hmm.
So many people become unpolarized or depolarized,
right,
because it's like scrambling the system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's step two, and there's a process for doing that. Very simple breathing and focusing process that's very effective. And the third step is the repatterning, and you might say that's the meat of the process, which is, now that we've identified the self-limiting belief, we've cleared the system so that it can accept a new belief, we want to instill a new pattern of thinking about oneself.
Right.
And that's where we install the, you might say, the corollary positive belief for a person. So if they're starting off with, I'm not adequate because of life experiences and all those micro traumas and all those life experiences, we might want to connect them with their capability, their competency, their adequacy to be able to face the challenges of daily life. And the fourth step is what we call anchoring, and that is a process that allows a person to not only anchor it in the moment, but also to be able to reinstall it quickly at any time that they might be challenged by life circumstances that want to throw them back to the old way. So they have a way of kind of reconnecting themselves to the true pattern of their life, their true beliefs.
Great. Wow. That's very exciting. And I loved seeing that you had a repatterning step. Because, you know, years ago when I first developed my system within this field, conscious healing and repatterning therapy, that was a step I learned from Chloe Wordsworth, who developed holographic repatterning. Holographic repatterning, that was the first system within this field that I had training in. And she was very, very adamant that if we have an energetic space and we pull out the negative, we need to put into that space what we want. We can't just leave it open. And early on, that was not really the way things were done. You know, there was just, let's clear it. Let's just clear it. But people weren't thinking about, let's put in what we really want. And that, to me, is such an important step because, as we all know from quantum physics and all of that now, you know, energy shows up in accordance with the expectation of the observer. So let's have the right expectations in place, and we're much more likely to get what we want.
And nature doesn't like a vacuum. So you take something
exactly.
out and leave it empty, what will fill its place? Well, we don't want to leave that to chance.
Amen.
We want to make sure that the right stuff gets there.
I agree. Well, this is very exciting. And how difficult is the process, Peter? How long does it take to do all four steps? Can, like, the average person do this on their own?
Absolutely. I mean, we wrote this for the average, ordinary person, not as a college textbook or as some kind of philosophical discussion. It's really a very practical, hands-on book that's actually enjoyable to read. The the people that have read the early manuscript have all commented what an interesting and engaging book it is to read, just kind of fun.
Great.
It's full of examples so that people can understand how they can apply it in their own lives by some of the many, many case studies that we discuss in there. The answer to the question, Paul, is it is very simple. It is an easy process to go through. The steps are easy. None of them are complicated. The exercises that people do are simple and explained quite nicely. A few things are in there that we've even put a few little diagrams to give people some visual direction. And as far as time goes, you know, I would say that most people could go through the process in probably about a half an hour. It can be used on virtually any issue that is interfering in a person's life, and it could be in the areas of business, people that are blocked in terms of money, in terms of success, in terms of accomplishment.
Yeah.
It could be in terms of relationships and where people are not able to resolve problems within a relationship, maybe not even able to love. We've had people who seem blocked in their ability to love because of microtraumas. Just to give a quick example, a young fellow that I was talking to not long ago that walked through this process, and you know, his experience was a family where there was a tremendous amount of prejudice and criticism and biases and negativity and judgments about other people, and he grew up with that kind of overlay, and yet it didn't produce any joy in his life, and quite the opposite, it dampened it. And so he recognized how important it was for him to be able to get rid of judgments and prejudices in his life. Well, those were all little micro-traumas of every time his mother and father would sit around and criticize the neighbors and criticize. It was imprinting on him this negative belief that there's all this bad stuff in the world and he has to be just as judgmental in order to defend himself. So that's an example of one particular variety, and yet people might also experience this in other areas of their life in terms of health. So they might be blocked in terms of their ability to get healthy, to remain healthy, mm-hmm. to lose weight, to do what they need to do to restore functionality and health in their lives. So it cuts across so many different dimensions.
That's so wonderful, because Lord knows all those issues show up in our offices and show up in people's lives, and if they can find something, a tool that they can actually use to help themselves, that's a treasure chest.
It sure is. That's a very good way to describe it, and I like that. I'm going to use that if I may. But this is a treasure chest, and it would be a wonderful thing for people to be able to find a buried treasure on the bookshelves or somewhere, in the listing at Amazon.
Absolutely. Peter, one last thing I think we should cover. I understand this is a really special day for people to purchase the book, because there are a lot of amazing bonuses available if they purchase today. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, Paula. What we've done is partnered with about 60 other individuals that have books, have training materials, have all sorts of great stuff that they're offering as free gifts, including you, I might say, that are going to give people these free bonuses when they buy Code of Joy. If they buy it today, they go to the site. I think you're going to have it as a link somewhere.
Yes.
And they put in the receipt that they get from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever bookseller that they go to. And that will give them access to all of the free gifts that are available. And there's hundreds of dollars worth of materials that are there, and some great stuff. So we're encouraging people to not only buy the book, but also take advantage of this opportunity to get a lot of neat stuff.
Absolutely. Great stuff. I've seen what's available. And since I know everybody on this list should have your book, might as well get it today and get a boatload of fun stuff along with it.
Exactly. We've tried to make it not just a great book, but also a great offer that people can benefit in so many other ways.
Yes.
So thanks for asking about
that. Don't hesitate, everybody. Get out there and get it. Thank you so much for this time, Peter. This was very cool getting a chance to talk to you about this.
It's been a joy for me too.
Let's do it again. Maybe we should do a webinar or something. I think people would love to learn even more about this whole process you've developed, the book, and all these wonderful...
I'm good for that. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you, Paula.
Thank
I've
you,
enjoyed
sweetie.
It. Bye-bye.
Bye.